98.7 FM. Arizona's sports station. Bickley and Murata.
It's going to be lit, is what I hear every single day. It's the greatest radio show ever.
Dan Bickley. Vince Murata.
It's the greatest show on earth.
Bickley and Murata.
This is the greatest show.
Good morning and welcome.
Show the world.
Bickley and Murata.
I love this show.
You too.
It's the greatest radio
really
show that's ever existed.
It really, really
in
is.
In case you needed a refresher for the new version of the prolonged open.
Let's cut the crap, Mr. Murata.
Bickley and Murata.
I hate everything about this show. This is the worst show in the world.
It is Friday. Luke Lipinski, Jarrett Carlin here with you in for Bickley and Murata. MLB trade deadline day, the day after the NBA draft. Cardinals camp in full swing.
Wow.
Got a lot going on, Jarrett.
It's amazing.
How you doing back there?
Oh, you know.
Oh, great. I get whimsical Jarrett today. A different Jarrett.
Reminds me of when I used to skip rocks on the old Mississippi.
You've never even been to the Mississippi.
That's true.
Yes, exactly.
You got me.
You did reveal yesterday when Lorenzo and Sarah were in here that you were a beach guy, though, for a good
absolutely
portion of your life.
Okay. Still to this day, I love it.
When's the last time you were at the beach?
Just, I don't know, a month ago or so.
Okay, and prior to that? Like 10 years?
No, I mean, I don't go as much as I used to. Huh. Let me put it that way.
Back when you used to skip rocks across the Mississippi.
Those were the days in the straw hat and catfish on the grill.
How did you feel about the draft last night?
It was a combination of I watched it, but it was a combination of I felt like I knew less of the players than in most years, just because it was a weird college basketball season. Plus, the Suns weren't in the lottery.
Yeah, I just meant like in general the experience of watching it.
The suits were great.
The suits were, was it Jalen Suggs? Jalen Suggs, that suit was pretty solid, the silver suit.
There was, you know, that was what the draft was known for, like in the 90s. And then it sort of went away from that a little bit, and now it's back with a vengeance on this the great fashion.
So, I know we talked about this yesterday. We talked about it during the draft show last night, too. And then as I was driving home, I heard somebody on one of the national shows talking about how ridiculous it is, too. What is the deal with
the,
not
what
the
is the
I really just sounded like Seinfeld there for a second. Why do they have to wear, like, even the Suns trade that they made almost 24 hours ago, they can't really announce it. They can't talk about it.
Who are these people?
You got to pretend that it didn't happen. We don't even know all the details. All the players last night, there were guys going up, you know, who was it that walked up wearing a Knicks hat? And the Knicks fans are like, hey, we got this guy, and he's not even on the team. And he already wasn't on the team.
It was
Kai Jones. He's a Hornet, but he's up there wearing a Knicks hat. And Knicks, like, what are you doing just to your own viewing product?
It doesn't make it. I don't understand it. It's the dumbest rule that is, like, it continues to be. So much so that, you know, when James Jones is on this morning with Doug and Wolf, he can't even talk about a trade that's been done for 15 hours.
It's just funny all the little things that these leagues do that are like, oh, you know, we gotta do this or that because we don't want to lose 5 out of 8 million viewers. But then that, for whatever reason, they're like, yeah, we don't care. Nine of the first round picks, all 30 of them last night, nine of them were traded. And because you don't know who's been traded or not, then it just feels like other than like the top five picks, you never know if a guy got drafted and actually got drafted to that team because there's so many that aren't on that team. I don't get it. That's such an easy fix. And somebody told me the reason like 2 years ago, and it was such a compelling reason that I forgot it instantly. All right, let's get into the splash.
The splash.
Splash.
The stories making waves in the sports world. The splash.
Cannonball coming.
All right, well, let's.
Splash, brought to you by Presidential Pools, Arizona's number one pool builder. See why at presidentialpools.com.
Sorry, fifth time's a charm on the Friday there.
I still hit the under, though. I managed to wait the first four times.
That's
at the
true.
Start of
you
the
thought
week.
You were going to do it twice.
Yeah, at least twice. Really, I thought we'd do it five times. The draft did happen last night. The Suns have but haven't yet traded for Landry Shamet, so they have him now as some backcourt depth. I like the move by James Jones because you add backcourt depth. I don't know that there's really anything you're going to get out of the 29th pick that's going to help you right away. I will say, though, as we did the draft show last night, Kellen Olsen gave us, like, I don't know, about three names around, and it was, like, at the fifth pick when he gave us these names to just watch for to see if any of them would be there when the Suns would have picked, and I believe two of them were. It was Sharif Cooper and Jared Butler were both there. So, take that for what it's worth. I mean, the Suns get a guy that's going to impact their team next year, and that's obviously the mode they are in right now.
Well, I mean, just look at last year. They had a much higher draft pick who didn't really see the court all season. So, in theory, if you're getting a rotation guy, that's an improvement probably what they could have gotten. So, I like it.
Yeah, I like it, too, because you're not going to... I mean, we're at a point now where you're not going to be able to really get help through the draft if you're the Suns, even if you wanted to, which is what makes it so remarkable that a few years ago when the Celtics were good, they had all those like top three picks, and they never got any better, which is crazy, because generally when you're good in the NBA... your only way to get to any better is either through free agency or trade. The Lakers traded for Russell Westbrook. I don't really understand the stance that people are taking that this doesn't make the Lakers better.
It is bizarre.
It definitely makes them better.
It is unbelievable how the view of Russell Westbrook has just completely changed over the last few years. That people... I don't get it, man. This guy, when he was the first person... to average a triple-double. Remember what a big deal that was?
Mm-hmm.
He's done it, I think, twice since then. And nobody cares anymore.
This feels like the sort of like... the backlash, basically, to how much attention he got that season, right? That's what it is. Like, I understand that the stats maybe don't tell the full story with Westbrook, and he doesn't play defense, and it's not like they went out and got a top-five player. I get that. But this thought that's like, well, they had to give up, you know, Kyle Kuzma for him, like, okay, cool.
So, well, he's no Dennis Schroeder. They should have kept him.
The Lakers are going to be better. I still don't know if that makes them better than the Suns. And obviously, it's a pretty good indicator that Chris Paul's not going there. Major League Baseball's trade deadline is today. Boy, you know, Jarrett, when we left the show yesterday, it was like Max Scherzer's getting dealt to the Padres, it looks like. That was the story that was out there by a lot of verified accounts. And I remember you saying, well, at least this makes life tougher on the Dodgers.
Yep.
How'd that work out?
Well, I remember saying, well, at least he's not going to Dodgers along with arguably the best player in the National League. And that would really suck.
You did not say that.
No. I thought that, though, and I willed it into existence.
But you did say that Scherzer going to the Padres, the only good thing was that it would hurt the Dodgers. And instead, the Dodgers got Scherzer and Trey Turner. Yankees get Anthony Rizzo. So far, the trade deadline has just been the really rich teams loading up. D-backs, by the way, play the Dodgers starting tonight. I don't know if they would see Scherzer this weekend, but the Dodgers.
No, I think Scherzer pitched, I think, yesterday. So
okay,
they won't see him, but they'll see Trey Turner.
Well, that's great, and
they'll see Scherzer in the dugout.
They still that's bad enough. They still play the Dodgers. I think like 10 more times this year or something ridiculous. Or maybe not. Maybe just
so you're saying a chance to catch up in the division.
Actually, they've really that's what I'm saying. They've actually really cut in. Yeah, they've 6 more games after this series, so they've still got 9 more games against the Dodgers. And Cardinals camp is going again. DeAndre Hopkins is practicing again. So whenever Cliff Kingsbury calls an injury a quote minor thing unquote, apparently he's being honest, because DeAndre Hopkins already back out there. We already seen video of him making some catches out there today at camp. So good news there. Certainly come back. We will get into the NBA draft. There were some compelling storylines in round one. They don't directly impact the Suns, but I mean, anything in the Western Conference does at this point, because Suns are at the top of it. So they need to know what's going on behind them. That's next. Luke Lipinski.
And there
Jared
was
Carlin.
A trade that it directly affected the Suns.
Well, yeah, but we're not allowed to acknowledge
we're allowed to.
We're allowed to. Okay. And we're going to talk about that certainly next. Both trades. That trade and the Lakers trade. That's next. Luke Lipinski, Jarrett Carlin, in for Bickley and Murata on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
98.7 FM, Arizona's Sports Station. Bickley and Murata.
Bickley and Murata.
All right, I'm not going to, like, at this point all day, but I'm pretty sure the reason that they have to wear the wrong hats at the draft is because of the fiscal year. Isn't that it?
Sure.
I think that's it, right?
I've never even understood what the fiscal year is.
I don't either.
In
I just
any
know
context.
It's at the start of July, so it didn't have to impact the draft last night. This It's literally like the NFL being like, you guys got to play around a parked car on the 40-yard line. Like, we're going to try and do everything else and pay attention to all these details.
The NFL literally used to have the goalpost on the goal line.
Yeah, well.
So you would literally have to play around the goalpost. People would run into the goalpost trying to stop a play. That is true. It took them years and years of playing before they were.
Even the NFL, which is not nearly as progressive as the NBA in most respects, managed to get the goalpost out of the middle of the end.
There was a point last night where... Because so not only are the trades reported well before they actually go through, but then they're reported during the draft after you have already heard them, but then they're also Adam Silver will get a card and he'll and there was at one point where he like read it and he, but he had to read it with such language that it does not actually and he just goes, well, that's what the card says. I don't know what the okay, whatever. Moving on.
We might even have that audio somewhere because we took that pick live because the pick was Josh Christopher.
Yeah,
and so we went to the podium and he was talking about the trade for it was Isaiah Jackson, I believe, and he's like, yeah, he's drafted by the Lakers, but then he was a Wizard, but now he's a Pacer. Right. And I'm just reading like even the commissioner knows it is ridiculous. And I will say this, like. The people that are freaking out that if you go on Twitter, Woj or Shams or whoever tweets out the pick like 30 seconds before it happens or 2 minutes or whatever, I don't know if there's anything you can do about that.
Well, do you find that obnoxious, though, the way they do it nowadays, where they have the whole gimmick where it's like, well, if you look at the top of the Lakers draft board, they'll have Zefram Beeblebots. Instead of just saying that this is the guy who they're going to take.
They could have used Zefram Beeblebots in the first round against the Suns. That doesn't bother me nearly as much as watching the draft and wondering which teams drafted the players. That just seems like, you know, hey, I'm watching the draft. Who got drafted?
Imagine if you're the player and then forever in history on the biggest day of your life, your official NBA picture is you wearing the hat of a team you never played for.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure all the Kobe draft pictures have him wearing a Hornets hat, don't they? Like, it's self-imposed idiocy. Anyway...
Speaking of self-imposed idiocy, Luke.
No, the kebab's coming up at 1:30. Oh, I was just trying to set you up. So James Jones was on with Doug and Wolf this morning. And again, the reason I said all that is because it's kind of tough for him to talk about Landry Shamet because even though the Suns traded for him, they can't, in an official capacity, talk about what he means to them. So this was kind of just a vague, what would it be like if Landry Shamet had been traded to the Suns? This is what James Jones said.
Again, the ability to shoot, the ability to play off the ball, the ability to defend, the flexibility to play multiple wing lineups, to play next to Devin if Devin has the ball. So just that versatility, lineup versatility was key for us going into the draft. And we came out with more versatility than we had going into the draft.
I mean, that's the key, right? You want more versatility. You went into a draft where if you were in the NBA Finals, you really should not get any help from the draft. And they got help from it.
Yeah, I'm not going to say that I know a ton about Landry Shamet. I've seen him play. I heard of him. I've looked at his stats. You hope that he's going to take a big place and he's a great shooter. Which they always need more shooters, especially with the way this offense goes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you heard a lot about Etuan Moore and Langston Galloway and stuff before they joined the team and what, you know, instant offense they are and great shooters they are. Neither of them really saw the court much the entire season. So you're hoping that this acquisition is a step up those guys in the rotation, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And everything I've seen also is do not interpret this as, okay, this is now their backup point guard, and they're not going to try to keep campaign.
He's not a point guard, yeah.
Right. But it's just added shooting, and I agree. I mean, the NBA draft is not like the NFL draft where you can find starters in the third or fourth round. It feels like it's essentially like once you get past like the first 15 picks, it's a total crapshoot.
Yeah, they flashed a few different graphics last night of like the best players taken after, you know, 20 or whatever. And I mean, there are some, but there's not a ton. Like we mentioned the other day, your favorite guy on the Spurs, Keldon Johnson, was 29th pick 2 years ago, and he's good, and he's on Team USA.
KJ.
Yeah.
Now,
as you call him.
Well, the Spurs probably have every member of that list because they have the Manu Ginobili's and Tony Parker's and all those guys that are drafted late. But the other thing, and I referenced this earlier, is that it's such a crapshoot, even if you have a high pick. The Suns in the last 2 years, they drafted Cam Johnson, who everyone thought they reached on, and has been a great part of the rotation. And then they got a guy last year who didn't even play at all.
No, and so their best player was the 13th pick in the draft, and they wasted all those top picks on Dragan Bender and Alex Len and Marquise Chris. Yeah.
So I like the move. But to me, the biggest move that came from yesterday was nothing to do with the draft. Oh, I guess it was because it was involved a first-round pick. But the Lakers blockbuster trade, which you talked about in the splash.
Yeah. I just wanted to say a couple things about Shamet real quick.
I didn't know you had, had it in you.
Well, we did a two-hour show on him last night.
Oh, that's right.
24, former first-round pick, has been on three different teams, so this is his fourth team. If you go back and look at, you can just look at his game log, I guess, but I do remember this, when Brooklyn had a bunch of guys hurt early in April, I mean, he stepped in and he had a 20-point game and a 30-point game and a bunch of, 17, 18, 19-point games. He can score. There was a stretch there where he was playing 30, 35, 38 minutes during that run. Where it kind of ended, actually, against the Suns on April 25th. But for most of April, he was playing a lot, getting a lot of shots, and scoring a lot. It's not like the Suns are going to turn everything over to him, obviously. But we talked about this on the show last night. I think we're at the point with the Suns, and maybe this projects forward whenever they get their next point guard who's going to ultimately replace Chris Paul in a year or 2 years or 3 years or whatever. That guy's probably already in the NBA developing on another team. So you're kind of, when you get to the point the Suns have now suddenly gotten to, like I said, you're not going to be able to draft a lot of the guys you want. You kind of let other teams draft them and develop them for you. It will be tougher to get your starting point guard of the future that way. I get that, but it's not impossible. I mean, Sacramento's got 17 point guards now, but a guy
none
like
of them
Shamet,
are of their future.
No, I don't know. I really don't know what Sacramento's doing. But okay, to the Lakers trade though that you're talking about. You know, if they had Westbrook in the first round this past year against the Suns, do you think it changes the outcome? Because I think the only way that series changes is if Anthony Davis is playing and the Suns melt down a little bit, to be honest. I don't think Russell Westbrook changes that series, but the Lakers do have a big three now with Westbrook, LeBron, and Anthony Davis. They just don't have anything behind it.
They really, truly have nothing on the roster besides those three guys and perhaps Marc Gasol.
They should play in
everybody
that 3-on-3 tournament in the Olympics.
They should. America didn't even qualify for that.
Seriously?
Yeah. The women won the gold.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
But the men didn't even qualify.
Okay.
Isn't that... It's hard to comprehend.
But land of the big three, and we don't even get into the 3-on-3 tournament.
It's amazing that the Lakers they have three super-duper stars right now and nothing else. I don't know how to interpret it because you said that Russell Westbrook wouldn't necessarily have helped them beat the Suns last year, but lots of people thought the Lakers, if they were healthy, would have beaten the Suns anyway and would have won the championship.
If they had Westbrook and a healthy Anthony Davis and a healthy LeBron, okay, that's...
No, but I'm just saying, just with a healthy Anthony Davis and LeBron, people had the Lakers as the favorites to win the championship.
You mean going into the playoffs?
Going into the playoffs.
Okay.
All last season. So who's to say that they're not still going to be the favorites? I mean, Russell Westbrook doesn't make them worse.
No. No, I definitely, from a Suns perspective, I'm like, all right, well, that kind of sucks. The Lakers did get better yesterday.
But
the thing is, Anthony Davis is never healthy. Like,
no.
You can't depend. If you catch him at the, quote, wrong time and he's healthy in a 7-game series, that's going
to
be tough.
But here is the most important thing, and we've waited way too long to say this. Chris Paul's not going to the Lakers now.
I said that in the splash.
Yeah, but you said it, Chris Paul's going like that. I mean, that's the biggest takeaway, and that is the biggest thing to emphasize now if you're a Suns fan.
Yeah.
It should be it's sort of mixed emotions. I'm going to actually put this as a poll question because, yes, the Lakers just got better, and you could view them as maybe your toughest competition in the West, but all those rumors, all the talk about Chris Paul going to the Lakers have to be completely squashed now, right?
Yeah.
And if you're a Suns fan, you have to feel so good about him returning to the Suns.
I don't disagree with you. I feel like maybe I'm wrong. I feel like most Suns fans, even before that trade happened yesterday for Russell Westbrook, I feel like most Suns fans expected Chris Paul to come back. Like just because, money-wise, it's a lot more difficult for the Lakers to make that work. It's not impossible, although now it is. But, I mean, even before the trade, it would have been not impossible, but very difficult, I should say. For all the reasons that Chris Paul tweeting out cryptic tweets that make it sound like he's coming back, just simple logic of everything he did for this team and they did for him last season, why wouldn't he come back and try and finish the job? So I hear what you're saying, and you're right. I mean, it really, if you were sort of worried that Chris Paul might end up going to play for L.A., this doesn't 100% squash it, I guess, but I thought it was like a 2% chance. Now it's like a 0.5% chance that he would do that anyway. All right, we'll come back and get into a little NFL with the Cardinals. Like I said, DeAndre Hopkins back on the field at Cardinals training camp today. We'll take a closer look at that receiver position as well. It is the Bickley and Murata Show on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
Return of the Red Sea. You're back at the stadium.
Rise up, Red Sea.
We're on the sidelines and in the broadcast booth, covering Cardinals training camp like no one else can.
The Red Sea is rising up.
The home of Arizona Cardinals football, 98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. Cardinals training camp coverage brought to you by Bud Light Seltzer and 72 Sold. Bickley and Murata talk Cards training camp now.
Well, it's still early in camp, but I mean, the Cardinals had to put six guys on the COVID list yesterday, and they didn't have DeAndre Hopkins, separate from that, with what Cliff Kingsbury called a minor thing yesterday. And it must have been minor because he's back out there and playing already. So, Jarrett, I'm just going to check in on you because you seem a little down today. So I want to make sure emotionally, how do you feel about that DeAndre Hopkins return?
No, good. My thing is fine. Not minor or major. All my things are good today.
I don't feel like that's what I was asking you, but okay, good enough. AJ Green.
I'm sorry, I had my comical response ready to go before you finished your question.
No matter what you asked
me about DeAndre Hopkins, but yes, I feel good about him on there.
Good, thanks.
He's made some great catches today, apparently.
Big analysis. A greater catch than I, as he would say. AJ Green was asked when the last time was that he wasn't the number one receiver on a team.
I don't think ever. yeah, it's been a while. But, you know, I'm excited. I'm excited for my opportunity. You know, I know what I still got left in the tank, and, you know, I still love the game. So I'm excited.
Doesn't it seem, not just because of that 30-second soundbite or whatever that was, but just based on what we know about AJ Green throughout his career, that this will be a good fit in terms of how he handles, you know, being on a team with DeAndre Hopkins? I don't know if he's going to be able, like, if he'll make it through the whole season, if they will find a way to get him the ball enough, any of that stuff. Like, I'm not telling you AJ Green's going to have monster numbers, but I just think in terms of a once great receiver who could still be very good coming in, but not having an ego about it, AJ Green sort of fits that bill.
Yeah, I think he's a good fit. And also, he is a veteran trying to prove two things. One, that he still has something left in the tank. And two, that he deserves another contract after this somewhere.
Yeah.
All that doesn't matter if he doesn't have a lot of it in the tank left. I mean, how he plays on the field is still going to be key. Because yesterday we sort of were comparing him and saying, is he an upgrade over Larry Fitzgerald? And you think he is?
No.
What Larry Fitzgerald gave you last year?
Yeah. Okay. Let me give you like nine caveats on that. I think he will put up. He has the ability to put up better numbers if they, like, I don't think they necessarily used Fitz the right way or to the utmost of his abilities last year. How's that?
That's fair.
I think they will try with Green.
Okay, but I mean, because AJ Green's a different kind of player, they'll figure out a better way to use him, or because Kingsbury and Murray have learned what went wrong with the offense last year, and they'll figure out a better way to use him.
I just don't.
And I'm not saying him specifically, but any of their, you know, the number two receiver, they'll be able to get involved more this season than last.
I just don't think they really set the bar very high with how they used Fitz last year. And so, look, Fitz is an all-time fan favorite. I understand he's not a guy that will get you 1,500 yards anymore. But, I mean, we all watched the games last year. There were games where it looked like he might not even extend that catch, at least one catch in every game streak, because they hadn't even thrown him the ball going into the fourth quarter. So, I mean, you've got Larry Fitzgerald on your team. Throw him the ball at some point. He's still, I mean, what, 54 catches on 72 targets last year? Like, if you throw it to him, he's going to catch it. That's a pretty decent percentage. The guy never drops the ball. I just think A.J. Green, because if you're asking me if he will be more productive than Larry Fitzgerald was last year, that only means 410 yards to eclipse what Fitz did and two touchdowns. A.J. Green,
you
better.
So.
He better.
Yeah, I agree. I don't. I just don't know why he was so ineffective, Fitz. Because that sort of factors into me about this season. Was he and the other receivers too, Christian Kirk and anybody else, Andy Isabella, whatever you want to say, was it because they weren't calling plays for him? Was it because Kyler Murray was looking for DeAndre Hopkins every time, and then if he wasn't there, he'd scramble or he'd, you know, panic or whatever? And how much has that improved? Because, like, unless you're just expecting A.J. Green to come in and just be such a much more dominant receiver and so much more skilled still and athletic than maybe Fitz was or something.
I'm not necessarily expecting that.
So if you're not expecting that, then it's up to other people to get him involved more.
Yes, it is.
Unless you just believe that Fitz literally couldn't get open last year, and that's why he had such a down year.
I don't necessarily believe that, and I always go back to what I think it was actually Kurt Warner said. I don't know if it was. I think it was when he was playing. He's also said it since. Of when you join the Cardinals as a quarterback, you need to realize that Fitz is open even when he doesn't look open. Right? Like, if you can get the ball near him, he's probably going to win a 50-50 battle for it more often than not. That's the sort of stuff I don't think goes away with Larry Fitzgerald just because he's in his late 30s. You know, maybe when he's 60, he's not going to be winning 50-50 battles. But if you're telling me, hey, you know, Fitz isn't going to, he's not going to burn guys down the sidelines on just a go route. Okay, well, fine. Yeah. He was never the fastest guy in the world. And, you know, now he's 30, he's going to be 38 here in a month. But I understand that being gone. But the fact that it's Larry Fitzgerald, and a lot of times he is kind of open even when he doesn't look open, I'm guessing there were more opportunities last year to get him the ball than just that one touchdown, which, by the way, was like an amazing play against Philadelphia.
Right, so then I guess it's a sort of wait-and-see situation, how the offense has evolved this year and if they are better at getting the other receivers involved, regardless of who they are.
Now, A.J. Green did say the offense fits him perfectly. I don't know that he's going to come out and be like, oh, this offense fits is terrible for me. Oh, perfectly. Yeah, mm-hmm. He didn't specify. Here's the clip.
I think this offense fits me to a T because it's what I'm used to. When I first came in the league with Jay Gruden, it's a lot of big posts, a lot of, you know, different, you know, outside routes that was my bread and butter. And, you know, last couple of years, you know, that wasn't the case.
Again, he's not going to be like, I don't know what I'm doing in this offense. It makes no sense. Why am I here? He's not going to say that. But it's a guy that has had a lot of success in this league, and he's giving you specific reasons why he fits in this offense. And I would hope that the Cardinals did their homework when they went out there and got him to make sure he's somebody that fits in there with what Cliff Kingsbury is trying to do. One more from A.J. Green talking about the dynamic between him and DeAndre Hopkins.
You know, I knew Hop, Hop's from South Carolina, so, you know, I know about Hop. All my family live upstate, so they know about Hop coming out of high school. He was football player, basketball player, so, and then it's coming to play with him, man. It's just like, he was just a guy, man, just a great dude, man. I know the first thing we talked about, I'm like, AJ, if you want a route and I'm on that side, we can switch. And, you know, there's no egos in this room with us. You know, I've been the guy. He's a guy. We're just trying to win a championship.
There are a couple ways where this goes really well, where just Kyler Murray has that breakout in his third year, or AJ Green really does still have a lot left in the tank, and all of a sudden you have like a 1A and 1B receiver. That would lead to a very explosive offense.
No, I mean, and the Suns, you're hoping that of these veterans that, you know, people say are past their primes, if one or two of them are still in, you know, show they still have a lot left,
yeah,
then you really got some steals. Like if J.J. Watt returns to his old form, all of a sudden that's an unbelievable dynamic defense. If A.J. Green can be like 80% of what he used to be, then all of a sudden you have one of the best number twos in the league.
Yeah, you don't need all these guys to be dominant. You just need them to be productive, essentially. I mean, you're not asking A.J. Green to come in and lead the NFL in receiving, or J.J. Watt to put up 20 and a half sacks again, because those things aren't going to happen. But in a perfect world, Chandler Jones is still your best pass rusher anyway.
Right. And DeAndre Hopkins is still your best receiver.
Yeah. Text rebound to 620-620 to receive an invitation to the exclusive basketball season recap Valley virtual event featuring Arizona sports hosts and other special guests. Text rebound to 620-620. This Valley virtual series is presented by 72 Sold, where you can get a higher price. When we come back, we'll get into the MLB trade deadline. It's coming up here in just over 2 hours. What exactly are the D-backs doing, and what are the other teams in the NL West doing? That's next. Bickley and Marotta Show on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
your exclusive home for D-backs baseball. 98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station.
Way back! This ball has got to go!
D-backs deadline day.
All right, Luke Lipinski, Jared Carlin back here with you. Gamba's going to join us later on in the show, right up against the MLB trade deadline, which, of course, is at 1 o'clock Arizona time. He had the story earlier today that Jordan Lawler, the D-backs' first-round pick, has agreed to a deal with the team. Not a lot of trades yet, though, from Arizona. And,
well, I mean, your hope
might just be because teams don't necessarily want to pay a lot for their players.
And that said, I mean, Eduardo Escobar was their all-star, so essentially their best player this season.
And you knew he was getting traded because they even kind of said a few weeks ago they had offers, they were just waiting for better ones.
Right, and you're hoping, if you are the type of D-backs fan that is hoping that they'll sort of rebuild, get some picks, get some young players, you're hoping that that's not the end of it. And they were able to move their best guy, and then, like you just said, there's nobody else that anybody wants.
Yeah.
It's tough. It's tough in general right now to make trades because the way MLB is set up with the extra wild card teams and with there's really no teams running away with anything this year, a lot of teams don't know if they're buyers or sellers, and they're just going to, you know, they're just trying to stay pat. It kind of puts the Diamondbacks in a good position in a way because they're one of the few teams that are completely out of it and are total sellers.
So take that, rest of the league.
You know what I mean, though?
And yeah,
that,
no,
like,
I do.
They're not on the fence. They should be like on the phones all day trying to make moves.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if you're like a team that's sort of hanging, I mean, look at the Yankees are, you know, only five games over 500, and yet they made two huge moves yesterday because they're still in it. There's not a lot of sellers, and if you're one of the few sellers, you think that puts you in a good position to unload some guys. But again, as you pointed out, you have to have guys that people want.
Yeah, and maybe they have some guys I could see teams wanting, but maybe it's just a matter of they're not getting the offers they want. Although, if that's the case, as we get closer to one, I think they're just going to take a bunch of offers.
I agree, because what's the point of keeping guys, especially if they're going to be free agents or if they're not a part of your long-term future?
If you look at the just the farm system rankings at the start of the season, I'm just looking at MLB.com's, and I know I think it was Fangraphs had them even higher, actually, at the start of the year. But they have most of these places have the D-backs as a top-10 farm system, so they do have pieces at the minor league level, but a lot of them are very like young prospects. Like they're very low in the system. They're like single A, whatever. And so it's not like reinforcements are coming next year to suddenly make this team good, at least not through the farm system. But, you know, to your point, Jarrett, you want to restock the farm system. It's like, farm system's not bad, but it's just a matter of you've got vets on this team right now that probably aren't going to be here when you're really good again. Unless you have a miraculous turnaround, and even that probably isn't coming next year. It'd be 2 years away, don't you think? So then it's like, why not get something for them?
Right, and even those guys, none of those are like projected super-duper stars. Who knows? But you could. It never helps to build depth up in your farm system, especially when there is no plan. I mean, this season, they're playing much better in July than they have in any other month. But they're so far behind, there's no real point in this season in hanging on to these veteran guys. You know, as much as we love David Peralta or players like that in the Valley,
mm-hmm.
at this point, he's not really a part of your long-term future, and he's not giving you much this season. But then again, if he's not giving you much this season, I'm not sure that makes him that attractive to other teams.
Yeah, that's the tough spot. Like with some of these guys, you want other teams to look at what they did, I don't know, 2 years ago.
And this is also what's frustrating me talking about the Diamondbacks farm system. It's pretty good and stuff. But it's so annoying that the Dodgers have the most money.
Yeah, it is.
And also
got Trey Turner and Max Scherzer.
And also have the best prospects.
Yeah. And you're in the same
division. Every year they have the most money and they have the best prospects. So they could sign the best free agents. And then they could trade for the best players because they have the best prospects to give up.
Yeah. No, it's ridiculous.
It's ridiculous because the Diamondbacks do not have the most money. I'm not sure if you're aware of that.
What?
And while they do have a better farm system, they don't have like the stud prospects that they could probably trade to get the super duper stars if they were in the position.
Yeah, and I mean, when you're the Dodgers and you can go out and be like, yeah, let's see, we need some pitching help. Let's get Max Scherzer. We could use another. How about Trey Turner? Or like a couple years ago when Boston was like, we don't want to keep Mookie Betts anymore because he's too good. And the Dodgers are like, we'll give you Alex Verdugo for him. Like, okay, cool. Thanks, guys.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
And you know, they do this all the time. And it's purely, right now, it's purely on paper. But on paper, you can make an argument that the Dodgers have the best roster in the history of baseball.
Oh, best roster in the history of baseball?
On paper. Because there's a lot of mitigating factors.
They're not even in first place.
That's true. They're not even in first place. You could argue that they're not even the second best team in their division. But just on paper, their rotation is 4 Cy Young winners and Walker Buehler, who might win the Cy Young this year.
Yeah. No, it's
they
absurd.
They have 3 MVPs in their starting lineup. Plus, they have Trey Turner, who they just traded for. I'm just saying purely on paper. Now, of those Cy Young winners, Clayton Kershaw is injured, Trevor Bauer is suspended, and David Price is washed up. So it's more semantics. But I'm just saying, like, the names they have on the roster right now are unbelievable. And the fact that they could just keep adding and adding and adding. The fact that they could make a blockbuster move to get Mookie Betts, and he's injured and underwhelming.
Uh-huh.
So like, all right, let's just get Trey Turner to help the team. You know, the fact that they could make the biggest offseason move and get Trevor Bauer. Oh, no, he's suspended. All right, let's just get Max Scherzer. It's so frustrating to be in a division with them. You know what's really frustrating?
Being in a division with them?
And
Now
the Padres are also like that.
Yeah, but the Padres don't bother me.
But I don't even know if this is the most... This might even be more frustrating.
Okay.
The Giants should be in the same boat as the Diamondbacks,
yeah.
And somehow they're in first place. The Giants didn't make any big offseason acquisitions. Their roster looks like nothing special at all, and they're in first place.
They're not even really like doing it. They don't seem fazed by the trade deadline now. They're
I know.
Just like, doo, doo, doo,
they're
doo,
just like watching. They're just watching the Dodgers acquire these all-stars, and they're like, all right, that's fine. We'll just beat them again.
But that is what's great about baseball. Like, what sucks about baseball is they don't have a salary cap, and so the Dodgers and the Yankees and the Red Sox can just go out and you know, the Dodgers having a great lineup doesn't bother me. The Dodgers drafting well and developing their prospects, I mean, I respect them for that. What bothers me is that what you just said. Well, we'll just go out and get Mookie Betts and Trevor Bauer. Well, those aren't working right now. Okay, well, then we'll go out and get Trey Turner and Max Scherzer. Right. And if those don't work, they'll just go out and buy more. That bothers me. That's a baseball problem. That's not the Dodgers' fault. They're exploiting it. But while you're right that it's kind of frustrating to be like, hey, wait a minute, the Giants on paper look the same as the Diamondbacks almost before the season, maybe a little bit better. Why are they 32 and a half games ahead of Arizona?
Right.
But that's what's – there's always seems to be one or two teams every baseball season that maybe don't – the Giants have the best record in all of baseball, don't they?
Yes.
Yeah.
They have the best record in baseball.
Maybe they don't go to that extreme, but there always seems to be one or two teams every year where it's like this doesn't – this collection of talent doesn't look like anything, and yet they sneak in as a playoff team.
Yeah, I mean, they're usually the Tampa Bay Rays.
Yeah, that's
that
true.
Do that.
Or the Giants, honestly. I mean, there was a stretch there where the Giants didn't look that amazing.
It's true, and they won 3 World Series.
Yeah.
But that's how you have to, if you're the Diamondbacks, you have to sort of learn from all these teams. You have to get the most out of your talent, know which, you know, veterans and young up-and-coming players to sign like the Giants. You have to develop your farm system so that you could either have the stars of tomorrow like the Walker Buehlers, or you could use those stars to trade for bigger guys like the Dodgers do. You have to learn from all these other teams. Unfortunately, they're in a tough position right now they don't look like either of those teams right now.
No, they don't. And the other side of that with baseball is like you do have teams like the Pirates and the Mariners and the Orioles who never look like that much on paper and never add up to anything.
Now, the one potential trade chip they do have is Ketel Marte, because I would think you wouldn't trade Zach Gallen, right? Is that the one untouchable?
He would be one, and Marte is not. I would say actually nobody's untouchable because I'm always worried about pitchers getting hurt.
Hmm.
But you'd have to make me a crazy offer.
Gallen has
Zach
gotten
Gallen.
Hurt twice this year already
because he's a pitcher. Pitchers always get hurt.
But Ketel Marte, and then the wild card that it seems like a long shot, but the wild card would be Madison Bumgarner. Is there a team who is desperate enough for a experienced veteran, playoff proven pitcher, who, by the way, has been pitching much better lately.
Really, this season, he's been better.
Except for the beginning of the year.
Yeah, but you could, if you're the Diamondbacks and you're trying to move him, you could at least make the case that a lot of people made to me before the season, and I did start to buy into it, of, you know, this is a veteran pitcher who's been great his whole career. Last year, you can almost throw out because they started spring training and then they stopped and then finished it 3 months later. That, if that's going to throw anybody off, it would be a veteran pitcher. And then when you look at what he did last year, it's like, okay, yeah, Bumgarner wasn't good. He made 9 starts last year. I mean, how much are you really going to read into that? And like the last 4 of the last 5 were okay. And then this year, look, it's not like he's been amazing by any means, but there was at least a stretch earlier in the year where he was pitching better. You're going to have a really hard time moving that contract, but if you did want to move him to a team, it probably would have to be a team like the Yankees or the Dodgers, who are like, yeah, we'll take a 7th starter.
Right.
And it doesn't cost them anything, but...
Or the Red Sox, or...
Yeah,
the
Red Sox are actually in first place.
The Giants, if the Giants are looking around and saying, well, let's make magic once again there, Matt.
They're probably like, once we got rid of Bumgarner, we shot right to the top of the standings.
We'll talk about this more later, and we'll have Gambo on, like you said. But the big question mark is, would that even be worth it if you have to pick up 30 of the $60 million left to Mad Bum?
You just don't want to be stuck in the, this doesn't feel like the middle, right? Obviously, with the Diamondbacks, they're at the bottom of the standings.
Right.
But like over the next year or two, you don't want to be that, like, hey, it's a 30-team league and we're like comfortably in 21st. You know,
yeah.
Like
the
you
Kirk
either
Gibson
want to be 30.
Is that we're 81 and 81?
Yeah.
2 or 3 years in a row?
You want to, but if you're going to bottom out, you want to get better out of it. You don't want to just bottom out just for the sake of bottoming out. All right, we come back. We'll get back into football. The Madden ratings for the quarterbacks are out, Jarrett. So I'm going to tell you where Kyler Murray fit into their top 10. Are you excited for that? You ready to see where Kyler Murray?
Even go down to 10? I'm sorry, top 5.
Well, I'm not going to give that away.
Don't give it away. Don't give it away.
Top 10 ratings.
Okay.
Because last year they gave him a 78 rating, and he went out there, and he was really pretty great for a good chunk of the season.
Ridiculous. Okay.
Yeah, so I'm assuming
they
made it better this year. We'll get into that next. Luke Lipinski, Jarrett Carlin, in for Bickley and Marotta, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.